It's you and me. It's you and me, baby, against all odds. It's you and me. It's you and me, baby, against all odds. We got a good marriage because we serve a greater God.
God.
It's you and me, baby, against all odds. We got a good marriage because we serve a greater God. Greater God. It's you and me, baby, against all odds. We got a good marriage because we serve a greater God. Child.
Today's podcast will be discussing how we navigate differences. We're two very different people. And certainly, I would say, in our case, opposites definitely attract. Mm-hmm. With that, though, it's like almost like magnets, like sometimes can kind of bounce off each other because we approach a lot of things differently. We've had very different childhoods, life experiences. I think we've done a decent job of navigating those differences head on.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the things that I guess may have helped us is, you know, just having a mutual love and respect for each other, you know, and, you know, realizing, I think, like you said, a couple of podcasts ago, that realizing we don't have the answers, but fortunately we know where to get the answers.
Certainly.
Or at least some of those answers to make everything else kind of work out and be okay.
Yeah. I know one of the early conversations that we had in our relationship, or at least a difference that we identified pretty quickly, was like our view of sex and sexuality in general. Yeah. I remember we sat down and was watching a sermon series, and the topic of the, you know, like the view of sex was what we were watching, and it really sparked a really great, honest, very transparent conversation.
For sure. Yeah.
About our views. And I'm so glad we had a lot of these very heavy conversations before we got married. I think we were engaged at the time.
Yeah.
When we had this conversation, and it was really difficult, but it also felt right. So, you know, neither one of us wanted to stop the conversation or shut down or say, let's talk about this another time. Like, it was really good to get a lot of those views off the on the table. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, I know my view of sex in general growing up was that it was a bad thing. It was a sinful thing. It was something that made people make bad decisions, make them, you know, seem just irrational. And it also was, at least growing up, was taught to me that like sex was awful because you could end up pregnant, and that is like the worst thing that could happen. Mm-hmm. So I grew up really not having a positive view of sex at all. I knew sex was important, you know, especially within marriage, and as a component of a healthy marriage. But I've viewed it very intellectually, like definitely only at an intellectual level did I know, okay, sex is a very good thing, you know, to have. But because I had such a negative view of sex for so long, it certainly wasn't going to change just because we got married.
Yeah.
You know, I thought sex was, like I said, I thought it was a good thing, but it felt bad because I went so long viewing it as bad. It also didn't help that sex, at least initially, was a physically painful for me. Mm-hmm. In previous like relationships, it was painful to have sex. So that certainly solidified my view. Mm-hmm. And likely it was a cycle. I probably had this negative view of sex, and just that probably maybe kind of facilitated, you know, having a lot of anxiety when it came to sex, and also just, you know, that probably fed into why sex was physically painful, you know, for me. Mm-hmm. So now you had a very different view growing
up.
Yeah,
absolutely. I learned what I learned from sex in various different ways. And none of the ways that I learned about sex were healthy. I learned from like older siblings and cousins and, you know, and classmates, and a huge source of my knowledge regarding sex was in porn, which created so many things that had entered into our marriage, you know. And, you know, so for the longest, I kind of viewed sex as definitely an idol. It was all I thought about, and, you know, it was just at the forefront of my mind. You know, it got to the point to where I started seeing women as objects, and just really, really not a healthy view of sex. And, you know, so when we got around to having that conversation, you know, and seeing those differences, you know, approaching our relationship and seeing those differences, we realized that if those differences continue to be unchecked, you know, or communicated, we were headed for a painful collision. So, you know, that's why we were so grateful for the conversations. I mean, there were tears and everything. It was such a important conversation to have.
I mean, I had that view of sex for as long as I can remember, mm-hmm. but I never actually sat down to like talk about it. Like, I never really articulated like this is what I think of sex. You know, yeah. So it was good to. Yeah, I thank you for asking the questions and genuinely wanting to know the answers and providing the space for me to just collect my thoughts mm-hmm. to be able to come up with the conclusion of this is how I view sex. And because it wasn't until I said it out loud, really, that I found, you know, reasons for it to be problematic. I remember telling you that one of the reasons why I thought sex was bad was that I had been cheated on mm-hmm. in the past. And both times, these were two, you know, twice. One, I remember, was my first serious boyfriend and also my ex-husband, mm-hmm. that it was a matter of them making decisions that was against their best wishes for themselves and for our relationship. And both, you know, regretted doing it. So it just had a hard time wrapping around my head, like, well, how is something so strong that it will make you ruin relationships just for it, yeah. you know? And I remember my first boyfriend who our relationship ended in that infidelity. I remember one of the things he said was like, well, she really didn't mean anything. And I was like, that's even worse. I was like, I would maybe be able to better understand if it was I fell deeply in love with this person and it made me question our relationship. Of course, there's no excuse, but that only solidified, like, man, sex is that dangerous that yeah. it will make you have sex with someone who you don't even want to be with.
Yeah.
And ruin a relationship as a result.
Yeah.
I also, too, had inappropriate grown men like approach me when I was younger that also really skewed my view of sex, because I knew that it was lust. I used to think lust and sex was like synonymous,
like one and the same.
Mm-hmm. And like, so when you got like 40-year-old men trying to holler at a 12-year-old girl, mm-hmm. like, it does not make it yeah. seem very appealing.
And it kind of goes back, you know, I feel like for the story for a lot of guys is pretty much the same in regards to sex. You know, it seems such as a rite of passage, you know, or like a tradition to objectify women, you know, like from your earliest days in school, like you get around your friends and like, oh man, look at shorties, fill in the blank. You know, and to be honest, I think your view of sex out of the pair of us is the more sobering view, because we're fighting to see sex as something that's holy and ordained by God for the confines of marriage. Or I shouldn't even say confines, but in the realm of marriage, sex is beautiful, it's holy, it's great, it's good, but sex is also powerful, you know, and is mm-hmm. and it is something is it could it can be dangerous. It can cause you to be irrational. It can cause you to hurt someone or get yourself hurt on an emotional level and also a spiritual level. Because it's as much as people would like to believe that it's just sex. It's no such thing. It's just sex. You know, it always takes a toll on you, even if it takes a longer for you to feel it or see the repercussions of it. My introduction to sex led me to lose my virginity at a really, really early age, before I was even able to have a healthy approach to it, or to even view it in a sober way. Like, it already had its grips on me. It put me at a disadvantage. Like, I didn't know how to have a healthy relationship with someone of the opposite sex, you know, or for my view to become sexual, or for me to objectify the person. You know, it wasn't until, you know, God matured me and started to undo a lot of broken areas in my life that having an unhealthy view and relationship with sex had taken on me. So it really takes a toll on you when it's outside of the realm it was intended for.
Well, I definitely appreciate that we had that honest conversation. So definitely the way that we navigated that difference is we attacked it head on. Mm-hmm. That is for sure, I think, one of our best things, because there's marriages that go 5-10 plus years, mm-hmm. never really tackling the differences in sex views and figuring out what works best for the relationship. So I'm glad that we tackled that early, and we were very honest and transparent, mm-hmm. with it. I think we were able to navigate our differences because of that. Mm-hmm. Also, we didn't judge the other,
yeah.
for how we viewed sex. Like, if I was like, that's nasty, or
yeah,
oh,
I probably
so
wouldn't have brought it back up to you then.
yeah, you wouldn't have. So or it would have been very difficult to, you know, it would have brought shame into the conversation, mm-hmm. which is definitely, I think, a poison to relationships. So I'm glad that we didn't place judgment, you know, on, mm-hmm. the other for our view, even though we could identify what was problematic, but we allowed our, you know, each other to come to that realization on our own. Mm-hmm. By me just articulating, like, well, sex is bad because I don't want to end up a single mother. Like, I had to hear that come out of my mouth to realize, like, well, that's interesting. Like, what? Why is that what comes to mind? You know, one of the first things that comes to mind when you think of sex, certainly safe sex is important. And, mm-hmm. you know, I would not want to be a parent too soon, but why would, am I treating that like it's a death sentence? Because, mm-hmm. It was kind of framed to me like it was it was just a bad thing to happen, mm-hmm. you know, and that, you know, men weren't to be trusted. So you're going to have sex and then end up being stuck with a kid,
yeah.
on your own. And, you know, I was raised by a single mother who was raised by a single mother. So I know that is probably me projecting just what I saw. They didn't make it seem like being a single mom was the worst thing in the world, for sure. But certainly it was heavily framed to me like, you do not want this, mm-hmm. life. You don't want this life. So I ended up figuring it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm glad that you didn't judge that, and you allowed me to kind of hear it for myself and be able to identify the problem with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way. I didn't feel judged at all. You know, I felt freedom to, like, even to this day, like, and it's getting easier to express to you, like, even desires, you know, and having. And feeling like there was room to explore certain desires, like, why am I having these desires, you know, or, you know, like, just to figure out the root of things, you know, and mm-hmm. once you figure out the root, you know, is this coming from a positive place, or is it coming from a place of like shame or perversion, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's crazy, like, speaking about, like, you know, areas where, you know, we learned, because, like, you learned from your mom and your grandmother, like, the fear of raising a child alone. Like, I was taught by, you know, married couples that, you know, the bed is undefiled, but as a single person, you know, hearing married people talk about sex, it only like put sex on a on another pedestal. You know, it almost made it, well, it made it a little bit worse for me. So when we initially got married, you know, it was almost a sense of, oh man, like I hyped sex up so much to where, you know, it overshadowed what marriage is. It overshadowed it a little bit, and I lost a little focus because of that, because I was so excited to get my license and put my car on the road or get my marriage license so I could have sex or whatever. So coming into our marriage, like, you know, there was a lot of areas we had to kind of like refocus and like, hey, well, no, actually, this is what it is. You know, sex is, you know, an awesome freedom that we have, but it's not the bread and butter. It's not the core of what makes a healthy marriage a healthy marriage.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we, you know, had that humility to to know, like, okay, you know, this is our view. This is probably areas that need to be changed, and just having the patience to work with each other.
Yeah.
And allow ourselves to look towards God and how He defined sex, because neither one of us had a healthy view, so we had to look at in the direction of a reliable source, and that was really refreshing for me, you know, to just redefine sex with you, you know, like same. And I just really, really like feel we've gotten to a really great place of like navigating our differences in a way that flows very well. Yeah. You know, we basically have exactly what we had when we had the initial conversation. We stay very honest with each other. Mm-hmm. We don't judge the other for their views. We understand that it's fluid and that views change, and we accept each other for who we are, and we respect each other's experience that led us to that. But then we're hopeful about just building a new foundation, and I'm enjoying doing that with you.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm honestly, to be honest, impressed with how we navigated our differences around the area, because that is it's a deal breaker for a lot of relationships, or ends up just being the constant point of, you know, of contention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you have one who wants sex all the time and don't even understand why, and maybe the other who is like, actually, I'm good, but they don't know why. You know, I think it's important to explore the why individually, like each person individually explore, you know, the why behind their view or their stance, you know?
Yeah.
And then be honest about that. And then meeting each other in a, not necessarily in the middle, though there is compromise. But
yeah, but it's not necessarily a compromise. I think
it's not
right. It's like a humility and respect thing. You know, the humility of knowing that your view of sex isn't the end all be all, you know, because there's a completely different person that you're sharing this life with. And respect knowing that the way you see it and the way I see it, though different, they are valid.
Yeah.
You know, and so what helped us is just the knowledge of those things, those two things, respect and humility, helped us to really be patient with each other. You know, I didn't look at your view of sex and said, oh, man, why you look at it like that? Oh, my goodness. And judge you, you know, and you didn't do that for me. It's like, oh, man, that's you doing too much, you know.
So another area that we always have differences with is how we approach conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I am a type A, sometimes, you know, argumentative. Let me rephrase that. I like conflict. I'm not afraid of conflict. I think conflict is a good thing. Conflict is where problems get solved, where growth happens. So I don't back away from it. I do understand that the majority of our society is not a fan of conflict, and many of us try to avoid it. Many of us kind of can feel small when faced with conflict and at a loss of words. I find all the words mm-hmm. when conflict presents itself. And I try my best to take an objective approach to conflict, too. But that's, in general, has served me very well professionally and personally. But I had to make sure, I definitely, when we got married, had to really learn that, yes, this has served me well in general, but that doesn't really matter if it's not serving our relationship well. So mm-hmm. How do you feel about conflict?
I won't say that I enjoy conflict. I do think that conflict at times is necessary because, you know, I've seen firsthand what's on the other side of conflict, you know, when it's dealt with properly. Mm-hmm. I would rather see it from I would like to take a step back from the conflict to figure out, okay, what's my role in this? Am I being fair? Like when I'm looking at both sides of conflict, am I being fair in my assessment of the conflict? So I'm kind of slow to engage, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm slow to engage in conflict. I have a tendency, if the conflict feels like I can't get a word in, or if I can't express my point, and I feel like the other person is trying to, I guess, control the speed of the battle, like I'll shut down, you know? So I guess if it's fight or flight, I'm more of a flighter.
Yeah, I'm definitely more of a fighter.
Yeah.
You know, because I want an answer. I want a resolution. Mm-hmm. So I will fight for that resolution, but it's not really worth it, as I learned pretty quickly, to fight for the resolution if I'm like pulling teeth to make it happen, and or if it's just is me taking the driver's seat to force it. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't really respect your approach mm-hmm. to conflict. So one of the ways that we navigated, you know, our different ways of approaching conflict is, one, identifying it, that I'm more of a fight, you know, and when it comes to the fight or flight response, I lean towards fight, you lean towards flight, and realizing that means that we both need to find a way to meet each other in the middle. So mm-hmm. I am less quick to fight, and you now are less at wanting to quickly respond by flight. Mm-hmm. That means that we're staying engaged with each other long enough now mm-hmm. to be able to figure out what's going on, you yeah. know, because if, especially if, I mean, for anybody else who's more of your fight type person, you'll always be winning the conversation. You'll always be in the driver's seat of the conversation. You always will feel like you're the one solving all the problems, and mm-hmm. it's really not fair if you're never really giving your mate an opportunity to be in the driver's seat. So I have been learning to figure out when it's best for me to go in the passenger seat and let you drive the conversation, regardless of how fast or slow your conflict resolution process goes. Because that also was a challenge for me, is that I like to solve things. Not only solve them, but I like to solve them quickly.
Yeah.
And that's unfair.
I think the worst approach you could probably have is to try to win the conversation. Well, I won't say the worst, but I feel like it's kind of like an unhealthy view, because like it's the goal isn't to win the conversation. It's more so to resolve the conflict.
And, yeah, in a respectful way.
In a respectful way, to where like we could both walk away from the conversation and not feel like our character has been assassinated or anything like that, to where we can both walk away and say, you know what, we know that there's no love lost, and mm-hmm. that respect hasn't been trampled on.
Yeah, which definitely takes some patience mm-hmm. and some practice. I think we're better at it now. Sometimes we, every once in a while, I just don't feel like taking the scenic route to conflict mm-hmm. resolution. I just give you an answer, and yeah. you're, And you sometimes are okay with that. And then sometimes you're like, babe, you need to give me a chance to think this out also, though, because it may not be that simple. So I do try my best, though, to, you know, request clarification.
Yeah.
Make sure I have all the information before I'm jumping to a resolution here, that I'm not dominating the conversation, that I'm allowing you to be in the driver's seat. We can share the driver's seat even. And really just, you know, trying to keep it collaborative. You know, that's my goal. And man, has that has helped me in all areas, honestly. So I feel like I'm better at professional conflict now too, because I'm in the same way professionally as well, which, you know, it's that if there's a problem, I'm going to attack it to solve it. And, you know, I in retrospect now know that sometimes I've dominated the resolution process to the point that I may not have really allowed those who are different types of conflict resolvers, you know, like be a part of the process. And so now I feel that I'm better at ensuring that voices are being respected and heard and validated, and while still ensuring that, you know, a resolution happens, but knowing that it doesn't have to be, you know, super quick, because what's the point if it's not the best resolution? You might need that time in it. And also I've really enjoyed now professionally allowing other people to come up with the solutions, because I definitely, because of that personality trait of mine, people look at me to solve problems, and that I felt was starting to become unhealthy. So our relationship dynamic has helped me for sure be able to share that process with my work teams, you know, too. So thank you for that. That's one of the ways that marriage has made me better in general. Hello. Amen.
Come on, somebody.
So, okay. So those are the things that I do. You know, like I said, I try not to drive every conversation. I try not to take you out of context. I try to pause and give you time. And I thank you that one of the ways that you navigate those situations is that you are not quick to shut down. Shutting down really is, you done lost the person now, like once they get to that point. So, but you've done a good job of not going straight to that.
Yeah, because, you know, like the temptation is there. It's just that I would more so want to resolve the conflict than to, like, shut down. Like, my biggest thing is that, you know, if it's two people in a room trying to speak over each other, no one hears the other person. And although, like, and that's the temptation, you know. And, you know, it kind of goes back to, like, family dynamics. I grew up in a home where, like, I'm the middle child, you know, so it's noise in front of me and noise behind me, you know, and, you know, it's so many times where I feel like, you know, unheard, you know, so.
And I wouldn't want to, like, you know, continue that.
Yeah.
Like, you're an adult now, like, because that's what triggers people, you know. If I'm not letting you be heard, that triggers you having episodes in your childhood where you weren't being heard either, so your emotional response ends up being magnified, you know, when things like that happen.
Yeah, and I'm gonna tell you, like, one a huge temptation, you know, at times when we don't do a good job at communicating and conflict resolution, a huge temptation is to just, like, be quiet and just leave, you know, and not leave, you know, like, oh, I'm out the relationship, but just walk out the door. You know, and I've made the resolve so far, you know, just not to do that, you know, like, stay in it, you know, and sometimes just, like, we get through some conversations, you know, it just be ugly. Like, I take the scenic route until I figure out what I want to say, you know, and one thing I say a lot is, I don't know. That's my filler word. I don't know, man. And then I go right back into it. But, you know, I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, I think you mentioned just you being a middle sibling and a younger brother, just in general, that is definitely another difference area that we have, is just our differences in our family dynamics. You know, I'm an oldest sister, and I'm from a family of strong, independent, Amazonian, like, black women.
Yeah, you cut from a fine cloth of the black American female.
I mean, I got some big shoes in front of me, man. That's like, this is how you...
You got good jeans, man.
You know. You know, but that also came with like high expectations and strong personalities. I think it's like, just as an example, like when I'm on three-way conversations with like my mom and my grandma, it sometimes it sounds like we're just fussing back and forth. Like you don't even know how a conversation is actually happening. It's just us.
And sometimes it's not a conversation. Over each it's just sometimes spending not a conversation. Time.
Yeah, but it's it's us. It's how we communicate. Yeah. Sometimes it's just it works for us. You know, we talk over each other. Although we're getting better, we're getting better at it. But when you want to be heard, the way you do it is that you talk louder. So I think that plays a role as well, you know, just navigating that. I have to realize that, like, just because this is what's normal and what has been normal for me in my familial relationships doesn't mean that that has to be, that's going to work in my marriage. So I do need to make sure that I'm letting you speak and making sure that you're getting your voice heard. And I think the whole that family dynamic is what also feeds into me always feeling like I have to solve problems too, because that is pretty typical of a older sibling who's, you know, has experienced that provider type role before, versus a younger sibling who, you know, really hasn't had to, they basically, you know, did what they were told. Most of the time, they might be defiant of it, but they weren't the lead decision maker. Let's put it that way. I made decisions and followed them through. You know, so
and there's a weight to being an older sibling.
Because, responsibility.
Yeah, like if you mess up, or even if your younger sibling mess up, because you know better. Like the blunt of the
you get the older sibling get in trouble.
You get in trouble.
What the younger sibling?
The blunt
did.
Of the consequences fall on your shoulders.
Ridiculous.
You know, and like so. But there's a strange dynamic when you're the middle child. The dynamic is it's like you're too young to have the freedom of an older sibling, but you're old enough to know better, so you don't get away with the things that the youngest child get away with. Like so, you're in this weird middle spot where like. Like you, and when you get told what to do, like you get it from your parents, but then you also get it from your older siblings. Like your older sibling is like your secondary parent at times. So
that's exactly right.
You know, and
I'm mom when mom's not around, sucker.
Yeah, you know. So I've had situations where I would try to tell my youngest sibling to do something, or I'll try to, you know, delegate tasks. You know, but I would get in trouble when it's not followed through by my youngest sibling, and they would get away with it.
That's that you got a taste,
of
that older sibling medicine right there.
Yeah, you get all of the negative consequences of being an older sibling, but none of the rewards.
Exactly.
So yeah, so
the ridiculous.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. You know, so a lot of that dynamic kind of feeds into like some of my insecurities. You know, like that not feeling seen or appreciated or valued, you know.
I'm glad like that was made clear early, because a lot of times, you know, the arguments will happen in relationships, but it's not ever really put out there like, hey, like I did not have my voice valued, you know, all the time growing up. So this is a point that I'm very sensitive about. Mm-hmm. We all have those things. You know, I have a friend of mine who she would be cursed at a lot by her mom. So like, she's very sensitive to being cursed at, even if there was no negative intention behind it. But that thing, you know,
yeah,
these things are rooted in a lot of these things are rooted much more deeply than we give it credit for.
For sure.
Yeah, like, so I am glad that I didn't brush that off. I'm just like, psh, you just tough
grow
enough.
Up.
Grow up, bruh. That I, because you respected my deeply rooted hurts and sensitivities, mm-hmm. you know, I really felt compelled to make sure that I was doing the same, you know, for you and not feeding into that. Because that's also the way that, like, you don't feel safe in your relationship. If that's an area that you struggled with, I don't want to be feeding into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to make a point of ensuring that you know that I value your opinion, your experience, you know, your insights. And I apologize if I ever forget to do that, because I do. I know I do, because I never had that growing up. We did not validate each other growing up. There was no validation. there was no what you view is important, what you say is important and mm-hmm. and valued, and it wasn't really none of that. And it's, and then I'm not really complaining about that. I think it was just my family's culture. We didn't speak about each other's feelings or emotions. We weren't very open emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Nor were we very reflective. I am only now, as an adult in my mid-30s, learning what it means to be reflective, to mm-hmm. actually look in and put words to my feelings and things like that. And, you know, some of us, I guess we grow up and learn how to do that, but I did not learn how to do that growing up. So I'm glad that I'm learning it now, because I'm seeing the fruit of that already.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
I think that doing that has been wonders for being able to navigate our differences.
Yeah.
You know, because you do know how to do that. You're much better at it than I am how you feel.
It came from nap time for me, you know, because I used to be a pain. As much as I like to say I wasn't, and that I was beloved by everyone, I was a pain. Like, I didn't know when, I played too much. I didn't know when to stop playing. So I got a lot of whoopings and naps in that kind of come in that order. You know, it's been like a
how did that help you validate, like,
well, I'm getting to it. So, like, when I would get in trouble and like they were like, go in there, take a nap, and I lay down before I drifted off to sleep, I would think about, now why did that happen? Why did I get in trouble? You know, like, what part did I play in this? You know? So I learned
I'm a little baby Freud.
Yeah, like I learned to kind of like reflect on the consequences, you know, and what events led.
What led to this behind whooping?
I was disobedient. Okay, how so? What did they tell me?
I didn't do none of that. I'll just be angry. I hate everybody. I hate you.
You ruined everything.
You whooped me for nothing.
Yeah, man.
I appreciate that. And it's good to know that there's people like you where it comes natural, and there's people like me that it can be learned.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't, if anyone listening is like, man, I ain't me, believe me, because I was the same exact way.
Yeah.
It is a skill that can be learned and is worth learning.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be able to navigate differences, you need to be able to articulate how you're feeling and what someone is doing and how that's affecting you. Being mm-hmm. able to put it in words instead of just responding with anger or, you know, withdrawing or, you know, being resentful. It eliminates all of that if you could just put it out there
mm-hmm.
just the way it is.
I'd say it's a true statement when you say communication safe relations, because especially if I say I care about you, you know, and I value what you say, and you tell me, hey, this is an area of contention for me, you know, mm-hmm. in my mind, I'm writing a list of things, like it's rules of engagement, you know, I know I shouldn't cross this line because this is an area, this is a soft spot for this person in whom, like, who I say I love, you know, this is below the belt. So I should stay away from that. I should stay away from communicating in this particular way because it triggers her or it triggers him, you know? So it's a beautiful thing when you're able to have these conversations and you give room to each other to express those areas of contention.
And it took me a long time to develop the trust to actually trust you with telling you the things that are triggering for me, because in general, I have trust issues, but I also have experience those closest to me having that information
used against
and
them.
Using it against me. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time to be able. So it was a risk to actually openly tell you, like, well, look, okay, mm-hmm. I'm gonna tell you my kryptonite here, man. You better not use it against me.
Yeah. But, and I tell you, it's a beauty in having those things used against you, because, like, you know how it feels to have mm-hmm. it used against you. So, like,
and I really respect it with other people. Like, I'm not gonna.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awful feeling. It's hurt, betrayal, and it's all all wrapped in one. So.
Yeah, I know what it feels like as well. So it's like, that's why it's
And, you know, mistakes happen. Sometimes we unintentionally mm-hmm. trigger each other. And so there needs to be room for forgiveness, explanation. Mm-hmm.
And humility to come back and say, you know, I was wrong.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, my drink is done. I done got down to the bottom of my herbal tea and my ginger.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But, yeah, so you know what that means.
Yeah, I think it's time to wrap it up.
All right.
When we get to the, how we say it? When we get to the bottom of the cup.
You got to say enough?
It's
no.
It's time to wrap it up. when our drink gets to the bottom of the cup.
What we say?
It's time to wrap it up.
When the drink is getting low, it's time to go.
There we go. There it is. When the drink is getting low. You know it's time to go. But first,
I wanted to explore it. That's why I didn't, like, cut you off.
I know, so you knew it. You just didn't want me to just butcher it first.
Like, let's see how this plays out.
At the end of episode 2, we very briefly mentioned podversation. And we just wanted to make sure that we provided our listeners with some context there. So,
because we said we would.
Yeah. So podversation was really just us poking fun at an experience that we had a few years ago. We saw India Arie in concert in Baltimore with our friends.
Mm-hmm.
Had an interesting night. We figured it would be like any other concert. We're looking forward to seeing India Arie. Love her. She had not been touring for quite some time, and she had gone through some things. And mm-hmm. You're like, oh, you know, this music about to be good. We got there and it was standing room only.
Yeah.
And the theme of the concert was that this was a song versation. Yeah. You know, song.
Conversation.
Mm-hmm. And like, oh, okay, that's nice. You're going to, you know, do a little chatting between songs. It ended up being much more
conversation.
Yeah, much more versation than song.
We weren't prepared for that.
We weren't prepared.
Yeah.
I had on some low heels. Thank God it were low heels. I was like, Lord, thank you for inch high little kitten heels.
I had on like dress shoes. Mm-hmm. Like we were all dressed nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it got to about hour 3.
Yeah.
Almost hour 4 before we were like,
dogs barking.
I think we're going to leave early. Feet this is hurt. Going a long time. It was the longest concert. I was like, the song versation was going and it didn't look like it was coming to an end.
But
we wanted to
get
our we just wanted to get our shoes off. It was not a chair in the place. It was all standing room only.
I wish I brought a lawn chair or something.
Like if they had given us a heads up, like, hey man, this is longer than your typical, 2 hour standing room only concert. Mm-hmm. You might want to bring a little lawn chair or something.
Yeah.
a stool,
beach towel,
flip flops,
something.
So every time we are having long conversations, or we remember that experience, and to this day, any reference of NDIRE I see or hear,
it's a trigger.
It triggers me. I'm like, oh gosh, India, why?
Why'd you do that to us?
Why'd you do that to us like that?
It wasn't the right venue.
It wasn't the right venue for a song versation, but if it was a beach,
that should have been a house concert.
Yeah, or you know, all the other types of venues that are outdoors during the day, you can lay out in the grass. I can go 4+ hours of
give me that
of a concert, but not nighttime, dark. Baltimore, standing room only.
And you know, they got cobblestone. So that walk to the car was brutal.
Brutal. And then we lost the car.
Yeah.
So we had to search for the car with hurt feet. Ooh, and there is no taking your shoes off and walking around Baltimore streets. Did not want,
Yeah.
But I was tempted. The Lord knows I was tempted. So that is where we got the song versation, or in this case pod versation reference from. So now you guys know, and just know that if you ever go to an NDIRE concert, she's fantastic.
Wear your walking shoes.
Amazing. Wear your walking shoes, yo.
Wear your walking shoes.
You know, stretch.
Yeah.
Stretch
Nice. Mm-hmm. Maybe do some hot yoga before the event.
Yeah. Maybe go to the chiropractor. Mm-hmm. You know, just be ready. Be ready to be there for the long haul, because you want to get your money's worth. But man, we had to leave early.
And this isn't a diss. We still
still love NDIRE, but I just will probably not be seeing her in concert unless it is an outdoor pavilion where I can lay out in the grass.
I'll do recon on the venue first.
Yeah.
So like, got some chairs and tables there. Well, yeah. I'm there.
Exactly. Just
hook a bird up with chairs and tables. I'm good. And,
yeah, we were getting hungry. I'm like, dang. Still had to drive home an hour. Whew. Anyway, thank y'all so much for listening in to this conversation between Brandon and I, and for, having a little insight into our podversation reference. We look forward to our next podcast. Let us know if you have any topics that you want us to cover. We have several, but we would love to get your inputs. Let us also know your thoughts on this podcast or on any of the previous ones. We really appreciate feedback. And
please leave us a review.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate your reviews. The podcast is now available everywhere that podcasts can be listened to, including Apple. So listen in, check it out, subscribe, give us a rating. You can also follow us on Instagram at Good Marriage Great God, or on Facebook, but we're really more Instagram folks, let's be real. We only on Facebook because Instagram forces you to have a Facebook account.
They made us do it.
Trying to force my hand, just like the man. I tell you. But we hope you all have a great week. Looking forward to next time.
See you guys later.
Baby, against all odds, we got a good marriage because we serve a greater God. Good marriage.